The Culture Coaching Lab. Go to www.culturecoachinglab.com. Go there today. Self-paced online masterclass courses that are designed for you to build your skill of multicultural leadership. It's live. I'm about to tell you more about it. Let's go.
Welcome to Culture Coach, a podcast with me, Nikki Lerner, helping you to engage in a proactive movement towards unity and understanding as it relates to culture and come from. Thanks for joining me today. You ready to go? Let's get started. Hey, thanks again so much for listening. You know, I wanted to create a space each week where you and I can learn about different cultures and come froms in a safe, non-threatening, non-embarrassing environment. I hope you enjoy this podcast. For more creative resources and ideas, you can engage with me at NikkiLerner.com. I am so glad that I get to spend time with you again today. I do not take it lightly that you want to listen to these episodes of the Culture Coach podcast. Whether you are sitting in the sun, you are walking your dog, maybe you're sitting in your office having lunch, listening to during your lunch break, wherever you are right now, I am so glad to be with you. And I hope that you remember today that you have everything that you need today to be successful as a multicultural leader. Keep at it, keep working, keep getting deeper into the things you've already learned, the things that I have been imparting into you. Keep trying to do them one layer deep, one layer deep, one layer deep. Keep mining down into growing this skill that you have. I want to share a story with you today from my life. A couple of years ago, I had a really important realization about something that has happened in my life. It's been about 25 years now that my mother has been deceased. And my mother passed away when she was 49. I believe I was 22, maybe something around there, 22, 23. I think I was 22. But I was young. I was a young woman. I had just gotten married 6 months prior to her death. She died in December. I got married in June. I was out of the house, newly married, and my mother passed away. She had a long battle with breast cancer, probably about 4 or 5 years that she had this disease. And she battled, and she was amazing, and probably was struggling in a way that, you know, those of us in the family probably never really knew to the degree. But my mother fought very hard. My mother, I like to describe her as a ball of light. She would enter rooms and just had this amazing smile. She was kind. She was funny. She was short, believe it or not. If you've ever met me in person, you know that I'm a tall woman. I'm 6'4". I'm sorry, 6 foot on the floor. My father was 6'4". My mom was 5'2". And so I am told by my family that I have my, I look like my dad, kind of a spitting image physically of my father. I have my mother's disposition and hopefully her joy and her kindness. And it was a big loss for our family. It was a big loss in my life to lose my mother. My mother was an incredible woman. And if there was any place that I felt unconditional love, it was from my mom. And I miss her. I miss her a lot. Her name was Wanda. And I have since taken that name. And that's what I call the voice of life and light and truth that I hear inside of me. I have named her Wanda. And so I feel like that's a beautiful ode to my mom. And that's really who she was for me, even as a young person. But as you can imagine, I mean, at 22 years old, losing my mother that early, losing my mother when she herself was a young woman really had a profound effect on me in a lot of different ways that I won't get into in this particular podcast, maybe sometime later, but it had effect on me, both wanted and unwanted, quite frankly. Losing my mother so early and having it be so tragic, and it's only been recently that I've referred to it as traumatic. Losing her that early certainly has been a catalyst for making me into the person that I am today. Something I can tell you is that even my approach to diversity work and culture work, culture as it relates to ethnicity and come from, really centers around even, I believe, the life of my mother, the kind of life that she lived. She lived an inclusive, welcoming, beautiful life with other people. There were always different kinds of people around in our house and her friends and all the things. And I believe that that has made me the person that I am. I have her spirit. I believe that losing my mother so early has definitely contributed to how I see and value people. I love that, you know, when I see people, I see them as worthy and valuable and worthy of attention and presence and all the things. And a lot of that happens when you lose somebody so fast. And so that, you know, that experience really marked me. Well, if I can reflect back on that time, you know, now I'm in my late 40s and I'm reflecting back on that time, even just a couple of years ago. What I remember about that time is, you know, my mother had fought and fought, and then it seemed like all of a sudden, in the last like 4 or 5 days of her life is when she really struggled and went downhill like really fast. What I know right now is that that was a blessing in a sense that she didn't have a, you know, extended time just suffering, physically suffering. And she left us pretty quickly the week that she had gone downhill. But what I remember was, I'll never forget the day that my mom died. And I remember my husband woke me up and said, "Hey, your dad's on the phone and he wants us to come to the hospital." And I was like, okay, so we got up really fast, you know, and we jetted down to the hospital, which was about a good half an hour away. We jetted down there. I remember being in the elevator and going up to one of the floors of the hospital, and the elevator opens and I see my stepfather there, and the doors open. It's like a movie, you know, the doors open and he's standing there and he said, just says, "She's gone." And so I remember being led into the room where her body was. And I'll never forget the, you know, that moment where I walked in and I was nervous. I was really nervous about what I was going to see, how I was going to feel, if I was going to be able to handle it, all those things. I walked in, I saw her body laying there. And my first thought was, that's not my mother. I mean, the body, sure. Yes, that is my mother. But my mother's spirit was not there at all. And so just this feeling of that's not my mother. For a long time, I thought that, you know, my brain doing that was really healthy. And maybe it was. Maybe it was for what it needed to be as I was a young person and developing and needed to shut that part off. Maybe if I leaned into every single detail of how I felt in that moment that I would have lost it. Maybe I would have never recovered. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I remember just sort of shutting down and going into, okay, what do we have to do next, right? That's the thing, is when you lose people that are close to you, people that you love in your family, it's sort of like that person dies and then the expectation is that you throw a party. And that's tough, right? If you've ever lost somebody, and maybe that's been your experience as well, is that, you know, you're like, I don't want to plan a funeral. I don't want to plan a gathering. I don't want to have to plan these things. All I want to do is sit in the corner in a fetal position and grieve my loss. Right? Maybe you've had that experience as well. But I remember we had to do all this planning and make all these decisions, and we had the funeral. And then what I realized, and I didn't realize this quite in this way until about 2 years ago, is that my family, we didn't grieve together. Like, we, in fact, we didn't even really talk about it. We barely spoke about it. And it's amazing to me even that it didn't even dawn on me that this is the reality until a couple of years ago. Because essentially what happened was, after the funeral, well, of course, during your planning the funeral, it's hard to really talk about how you're feeling, right? Because everybody's trying to keep it together in order to plan the party. But then after the funeral, it's like everybody went and grieved on their own, right? I went back to my new marriage and grieved on my own. My brother, who was stuck in the house with his father and without our mom, he had to grieve on his own. My stepfather had his own way of grieving, and he grieved on his own. My grandmother, my mom's mother, grieved on her own. Everybody grieved on their own. There was no collective sense of what do we do now? I think everybody just felt lost. Everybody just felt like, oh my God, like everything has changed. And I don't know if nobody either wanted to talk about it, they didn't know how to talk about it, or we didn't want to talk about it with each other. I don't know. I have asked my family some questions after that. So I have a few more answers than I had then. However, we didn't grieve. We didn't end the life we had currently known. And even as a family, trying to redefine, who are we going to be now? Who do we want to be now? In order to, you know, go forward and move ahead and move ahead together. We never did that. And that had lasting impact on my family. I think it's part of why in my family we can feel so separate and less collective even now, because we didn't do that. My mother was the glue. My mother was the glue that held our family together. So I'm bringing this up. A very deep example from my past, to talk to you a little bit about the necessary endings. And one of the things that is so important when you are moving from monocultural life to multicultural life is many times it's very important for you as a leader to mark when things are changing, when they're different, and giving people an opportunity in your organization even to grieve it, to grieve what they have known, to grieve maybe even a system that has worked for them for so long, to grieve maybe they have to spend more time learning a new skill, a new leadership skill, a new way of being in their work. Oftentimes what happens is I work with leaders who get the vision for a more multicultural environment and then just start to move ahead without really marking that things are changing. Because when something is not going to continue the way that it was, it's important to mark the moment. It's important to highlight the necessary ending. And so I ask you today as a leader, as you are working on your own multicultural journey in your organization, have you marked the necessary ending of your monocultural existence? Or are you still afraid to call it what it is? Are you still holding on to what was? Maybe at some point hoping it will go back, if you're honest. Or do you have the courage to mark the necessary ending and move forward into your new multicultural existence? Some of you that may have been struggling over the last year or so, and you're like, why can't we get this moving? Or why isn't this working? It's possible that what might be missing from your story is a necessary ending. I'll tell you a story about a client that I had years and years and years ago. And they inspire me because they were two leaders, an African-American man and a white man, that met each other at a retreat for leaders. And one man pastored an African-American church in the city. And the Caucasian man pastored a mostly white American church in the city. And they met each other at this retreat, and they had such a kindred spirit. They had such deep connection. They had such brilliant conversation with one another, and they felt like brothers reunited. And at this retreat, they asked this question: why are we doing church separately? Let's not do that anymore. We want to be together. So these men left this retreat with this vision and this plan. And so the black man went back to his church and told them, we are going to join forces with this other church in the city. And the white man went back to his church and said, hey, we are no longer going to do church alone from our brothers and sisters who look different than we are. This is about to end. And then what they decided to do was they decided to hold a funeral. I couldn't believe it when they told me this. I was like, wow, this is really what you did? They said, yes, because what we wanted our people to know is that what has been will no longer be. We are moving towards something new. And what the funeral did was it actually allowed both of the people within these churches to both celebrate what was and mourn and grieve what was. And while that wasn't a popular decision amongst many of the congregants that were there, and many of them chose not to stay, the majority of the congregants in these faith communities decided to stay. And they took part in the funeral. And they loved what was, and they were looking forward and ahead to the new multicultural vision. And that church, that integrated church, in 2024, when churches are still more racially segregated than ever, that church is still together. They are still worshiping together. They are still meeting together. They are still welcoming and including other people together. And that is a thing that just makes you look at it and just go, wow, look at that. That is actually the power of the Spirit. But what I want to highlight for you is that these men decided to hold a funeral for something that probably for them was very beautiful in order to achieve something that for them was greater. What is the necessary ending that you need to mark today? Come on, let's go. Hey, thanks so much for making the time to listen. If you like the insight today, tell your friends and be part of the newsletter at nikkilerner.com. Remember, it takes that first decision to realize your vision for a more generous, multicultural life. I'll see you next week. This episode of the Culture Coach podcast is sponsored by Timekeeper Financial Solutions. Timekeeper helps creatives and small business owners keep their financial books in order so that you can do what you're great at. Timekeeperfinancial.com, keeping count of what counts.